of, yeah, jammed up by the system, so to speak, and sees himself as a political prisoner.
Why'd you call it homegrown?
Because I think very often when we talk about these tensions, these divisions, people and the media often refer to other people coming into a place from somewhere else, and we really want to make clear that this is a homegrown issue, a homegrown problem that we need to address.
So you were just at the Venice Film Festival. What's next?
We have about 25 festivals coming up around the United States in Europe, and those festivals will be listed at homegrown.film as they become live.
What do you expect to happen next January 6th?
If this was a foreign country, the State Department would issue travel advisories for this fall. So I'm very concerned with the height of sort of violent rhetoric that only seems to have gotten worse since last year. I feel like perhaps on January 6th, we might not see what we did in 2021. But between the election and January 6th, I think we were prepared for an escalation of violence.
Michael Primo, director of the new documentary, Homegrown. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at KBOO.FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Wake up, KBOO listeners. It's time to support local community-based media this fall by donating and becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give. When you contribute now until September 21st, your donations will be matched dollar for dollar, up to $11,000, thanks to listeners like you. Double the impact and double the fun.
Hi, this is Cecil Prescott. Celeste Carey and I are the co-hosts for More Talk Radio, which airs on KBOO FM 90.7 on Mondays at 8 a.m. For 30 years, Celeste and I have been encouraging and engaging interviews and conversations about politics, social issues, and things which concerns you, your family, and your community. Join us on Mondays at 8 a.m. and be a part of this community radio experience.
Rise them up, KBOO 90.7. You don't know it's your girl, Tasha T.
Welcome to Let's Talk About Race, an intergenerational discussion about race with independent journalists from the Pacific Northwest. From Grassroots News Northwest, I'm your host and moderator, Lenita Duke.
Hi, I'm Althea Billings. I'm a journalist and radio producer in Portland, Oregon, and I'm Generation Z.
Greetings. I am Professor Johnson, political analyst and educator, and baby boomer from the Lone Star State, Texas.
I am Cecil Charles Prescott. I host a talk show in Portland, Oregon, and I am a baby boomer.
I'm Nia Gray, the faith reporter from Pennsylvania, and I'm Generation X.
Hello, my name is Mary Lee, and I live in Portland, Oregon, and I work for The Mill, the Multnomah Idea Lab.
Come on,
let's talk about race. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about
race.
Let's talk about
race.
Talk about
race.
On this edition of Let's Talk About Race, we reflect and celebrate a moment in time when the basketball stopped bouncing, when the pitcher stepped off the mound, and when the tennis racket stopped swinging. On August 26, 2020, NBA players stayed in their locker rooms.
No, they are not.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
No, they are not playing basketball. No, they are not playing basketball. No, they are not. No, they are not playing basketball. No, they are not playing basketball.
Our team statement, the past 4 months have shed a light on the ongoing racial injustices facing our African-American community. Citizens around the country have used their voices and platforms to speak out against these wrongdoings. Over the last few days in our home state of Wisconsin, we've seen the horrendous video of Jacob Blake being shot in the back 7 times by a police officer in Kenosha, and the additional shooting of protesters. Despite the overwhelming plea for change, there has been no action. So our focus today cannot be on basketball.
When we take the court and represent Milwaukee and Wisconsin, we are expected to play at a high level, give maximum effort, and hold each other accountable. We hold ourselves to that standard, and in this moment, we are demanding the same from lawmakers and law enforcement. We are calling for justice for Jacob Blake and demand the officers be held accountable. For this to occur, it is imperative for the Wisconsin State Legislature to reconvene after months of inaction and take up meaningful measures to address issues of police accountability, brutality, and criminal justice reform. We encourage all citizens to educate themselves, take peaceful and responsible action, and remember to vote on November 3rd on the behalf of the Milwaukee Bucks.
Often before these games, there have been moments of focus by the athletes on social justice. Players throughout the league have been vocal all summer about an ongoing commitment to this. You're going to see that here. Public address announcer Mike Ross.
Racism has been embedded in our society for far too long. Today and every day, the NHL and the hockey community are committed in the mission to combat racial injustice and achieve a fair society for all. The NHL would like to take this moment to wish Jacob Blake and his family well and call out to our fans and communities to stand up for social justice and the effort to end racism.
No, they are not.
They're playing basketball. We love their basketball.
No, they are not playing basketball. No, they are not playing basketball.
NECA, I wanted to ask you, it's been a difficult couple of hours as you guys had these conversations because not everybody was in agreement at first, but how did you come to an agreement and what was important about that?
You know, to be honest, I feel as though what was most important is the solidarity, the unity, the collectiveness of how we've always organized. My role in what I do as president is to lay out the options and to really make sure everyone understands the implications of the decisions that we make, especially if we do it together. There was a lot of, you know, kind of oscillation back and forth, and eventually most teams or players agreed that not playing today was the option. And I ride for my players. And so right now we're not just trying to make a statement today. We're trying to also figure out what actionable items can come out of this, because we stand in solidarity with our brethren, you know, and right now there's just so much more that we have on our minds, but with our platform there's so much more that we feel that we can do to really create some serious change.
It's amazing in terms of this movement, in terms of just generally the uprising in the late 2019, 2020, we saw the rise of a new generation of leaders, and many of them were queer Black women who led this movement. And we also saw how women voices became louder and more prominent. And so we have the women athletes leading the call for social justice.
And it was great that the Milwaukee Bucks started this. Players in the Milwaukee Bucks, they had that press conference. They said, we're not going to play. So can you imagine now something like that happening? It reminds me of in 1968 at the Olympics when those brothers who were they track
athletes, yes.
Right, and they did that Black Power salute in 1968 in Mexico City. It reminded me of that, and that shocked America. Do you think that the sports boycott in August of 2020 shocked America as well?
I think the sports boycott in 2020 shocked America because it challenged America in two ways. One is challenge America's devotion to sports. And there are few things that unite this diverse nation, but people in every community want to talk about their sports team, their favorite athletes.
And so many people of all ages look at these athletes and project onto them all sorts of things. So what we had in 2020 was this uprising of athletes raising their voices, acknowledging and recognizing their power to transform not only their particular sports, but to have an impact on the nation. And so in 2020, athletes, rich athletes, powerful athletes, took a stand which threatened their own livelihood and also gave voice to millions of people who did not have access to the media or the ability to make their voices heard. So 2020 was an opportunity in which these athletes exercised their power and their voices for something more than their own pockets, but for justice. That was an amazing moment in modern history.
This is Let's Talk About Race, an award-winning, progressive, intergenerational roundtable of journalists from around the country. We go deep on current events and the role that race plays in our world today. Our show is hosted by Lenita Duke, the award-winning producer of Grassroots News Northwest. Our panel includes Professor Diane Johnson, journalist Althea Billings, talk show host and Reverend Cecil Prescott, and host of The Faith Report, Nia Gray, and proud bureaucrat, Mary Lee. This is Let's Talk About Race.
The NBA. Dribble some social justice. Let's start with Cecil. Cecil, our colleagues, our younger colleagues, they don't know anything about the NBA, bless their hearts. How significant is it that players have canceled this championship? One game, but it could develop. And not only has it developed, the baseball has canceled a couple of games tonight. This is sending a ripple effect throughout the sports industry. How significant is this?
I think it is fairly significant. If we recall that after the George Floyd murder, NBA players boycotted and stopped playing. That was sort of interrupted because we had all the other things that happened. And so what the NBA thought was, you know, we had to rearrange things and make things because of the coronavirus, and we'll have this in-bubble championship season. And so for the last week, as playoff games have been happening. And what we've seen after each game, players making statements, and now with the assassination of Mr. Blake in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the players have said this is enough. And so what you have is the Milwaukee Bucks team saying that we will not go onto the court. And they played where they play is not that far from where Mr. Blake was assassinated by the cops. And so we have this ripple effect of players who have been grumbling for some time now saying that we will not play and we will make a very vocal statement. And so you have not only high profile players such as LeBron James, who have been very vocal in these past few weeks, but all the players saying that we will not play. What will happen? I don't know. You know, you'll have that ripple effect with the WNBA, and now you just mentioned Major League Baseball. It because, to my mind at least, high profile players have a social obligation not only to make money for themselves, but because they are so high profile, they have the opportunity to bear witness to social justice movements. And we'll see what will happen.
Professor Johnson, how significant is this?
I think it's incredibly significant. And I feel a certain amount of optimism to think they're putting a lot on the line by not playing. As you said, they've worked their entire career to get to this point, and they have basically sent a message that this is more important. I feel optimistic. As Cecil said, and you have said, it is a ripple effect. We've got three sports now that have come out openly and said they're boycotting. They're not going to participate. And LeBron James, they had an interview with him, or a brief interview with him, and he said that he is 100% on board with this and that he is sick of this happening.
Nia Gray, our faith reporter, don't you find it interesting that these millionaires, these black males, still have to go through what Jamal, who works down at the car wash, has to go through in America? Black Lives Matter.
Well, sure. And it was a rookie that was on the Bucks team 2 years ago, Sterling Brown, who was actually tased and arrested over a minor parking infraction. And it's interesting because he sued the city of Milwaukee. They gave him a settlement, or offered him a settlement, and he turned it down so that he wouldn't be, so he would be able to continue to speak out against injustice. So he didn't sign the non-disclosure agreement. He didn't sign the NDA. So I thought that that was very noble. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, whether you're a millionaire basketball player or you're Jamal bagging groceries at Safeway, the police see you. In fact, Chris Rock, and not to use crude language, said, you know, what is a millionaire comedian in a Land Rover? He's a...
You were probably going to have to cut that, right?
Yeah, sorry. You want me to say it again? With that contained
yes,
N-word?
Say take one.
Sorry, I was watching Malcolm X. I'm all riled up. So yes, the NBA players, they know that when they come off the court and they get in their cars, the police see them exactly as they see Jamal bagging groceries down at Safeway, that they consider them an N-word, whether they have money or not.
Althea.
Yeah. One thing that I think is really interesting that speaks to really the significance is that, you know, the NBA put in a lot of effort to make this season happen in quarantine. They've got a bubble going down at Disney World. They have press bubbled in with them to make sure that they could have this season and still be able to, as you mentioned before, and as Cecil was pointing out, still be able to make money. The idea is to not try to pull focus. That these, specifically for the Milwaukee Bucks, this is something that happened right where they are supposed to be representing from. And by not playing, they're not giving people the opportunity to escape the reality of what's happening, specifically policymakers in the community who have not pressed charges against the officers who committed this act. I also, as we are recording this today, this is the 4-year anniversary of when Colin Kaepernick started kneeling in protest of racial injustice and police brutality in the NFL. And so it's interesting to see how teams in the NBA, like you said, it's not the NBA as an institution, but MLB as an institution and the WNBA are now backing off of having their games that are scheduled for this particular time, and comparing that to how the NFL treated Colin Kaepernick and essentially blacklisted him for, you know, him using his using his platform to speak out.
You're listening to Let's Talk About Race, internationally awarded Best Audio Podcast and Best Audio Production at the Swedish International Film Festival, Eddie Play International Film Festival in France, Echo Nation Audio and Film Festival in Greater Manchester, England, Bright International Film Festival in London, and at the Fourth Dimension Independent Film Festival in Bali, Indonesia. Let's Talk About Race is an intergenerational roundtable discussion of independent journalists who engage in rigorous conversations and analysis of news coverage regarding the role race plays in politics, government, the economy, education, and health. And now, back to our show.
Why do you think it's important for us to revisit that, especially now, 4 years later, we are in September and October of 2024.
In many ways, it seems as if we are in a different place. But some of the issues that were raised in 2020, and you know, we can go back generations, continue to be lifted up. And I think it's important to remember it's a different way in which people are organizing and recognizing their power. And so it's a case study, perhaps, on how to organize in this decade moving forward, the digital revolution, the fact that everyone has a computer in their hand, the fact that communication is instant over many, many, many countries, and that communities can organize together in many different places at the same time. And 2020 crystallized the power of this new opportunity to organize and to challenge the powers that be. What that also meant, that the powers that be recognized that the old methods they used to put down rebellions or to put down voices, they also had to change. They also had to modernize. And so we see things such as, I don't want to use the word fake, but since that's in the popular parlance, fake ads, fake news stories, ways in which to motivate people to do things that they may not want to do, but the convincing power of advertisement maybe allow those in power to push back.
That's an interesting point you made about pushback, because since 2020, there's been a couple of campaigns to denigrate any kind of racial and class inclusion. And one effective campaign was the assault on DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. In some circles, that's a bad word now. And because of that, do you see a moment like this happening again where hockey players can unite with basketball players, can unite with tennis players, can unite with baseball players?
Yes, yes. Yes, DEI is the new N-word. That's just a replacement, you know? It's another way to say we don't want you. I don't think you can plan when these moments will erupt. You can't prepare the ground for that to take place. Looking back at 2020, you look back at athletes and organizing that takes place over time. So you have in the 1950s and the 1960s, particularly the 60s and the 70s, you have professional athletes organizing and saying that we want to have a voice, we want to be paid, we don't want to be like slaves, which professional sports very much was like. The players had to do what the owners told them to do. They could not move from one team to another team. They had no power. So they began to organize themselves in the 1960s and the 1970s. And I want to go back to people like Curt Flood, black baseball player for St. Louis, who said, I don't want to be a slave anymore. He stood up. His baseball career ended, but he laid the foundation for the union movement and the possibility for athletes to find their voice. So what we saw in 2020 was something that began decades before in terms of building up, people gaining and finding their voices. And so we saw things like in 1968, which in the Olympics was part of the whole generation of the movements of the 1960 anti-war, pro-civil rights movement that took place in 1968. It was an uprising there, and all these things build upon one upon the other, so that it culminated in 2020, where we have all these athletes from different sports uniting. And I think the point you made about the athletes in the NHL, the National Hockey League, which is know, one of the sports field that still remains predominantly white, the ability that players in different sports were able to unite to say that this is wrong, that voices must rise up and speak clearly. That was an opportune moment. I appreciate us looking back on that time, because although it's only 4 years, until I listened to that program last night, I forgot a lot of what it was to be like in that moment. And the fact that athletes could organize, that people throughout the world could organize in the midst of a pandemic. And this is even before any vaccines came out. That is so incredible that the organizing that was done took place in the middle of a worldwide health pandemic, and yet people refused to be shut down, their voices shut down. They needed to speak out and they needed to stand out. And athletes, I don't want to say they were the leaders, I think they followed the movement. They amplified the movement because of who they were. And I hope that moving forward, we will find times in which that can happen again and again. And it will need to, because each generation, each moment is a moment for us to do something new. And we have to be aware of who we are and aware of our history so we can build together of our common future.
This is Let's Talk About Race, an award-winning, progressive, intergenerational roundtable of journalists from around the country. We go deep on current events and the role that race plays in our world today. Our show is hosted by Lenita Duke, the award-winning producer of Grassroots News Northwest. Our panel includes Professor Diane Johnson, journalist Althea Billings, talk show host and Reverend Cecil Prescott, and host of The Faith Report, Nia Gray, and proud bureaucrat, Mary Lee. This is Let's Talk About Race.
Now, Nia, you grew up during the Michael Jordan love fest, and I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but at the same time, I do. Do you think this could have happened in Michael Jordan's heyday when everybody was giving him love for those tennis shoes and stuff?
So are you asking me if they, when Michael Jordan was playing, if they would have went through with this boycott?
Yes. I see. Compared to the Michael Jordan era, compared that to the LeBron James era, I see the LeBron James era being much more socially aware, as opposed to the Michael Jordan era, where young black people were killing each other over a pair of tennis shoes.
Well, absolutely. I do. I think that LeBron James is, you know, heart and soul and the leader of, you know, the NBA, that he's very outspoken against the police's racist abuse and killing of people of color. He's spoken out about a lot of other issues where all Michael Jordan seemed to care about, and I think after watching the recent documentary that he would agree, is all he cared about was winning. And so that's where a lot of his energy went. And I know that we remember when he could have stepped up and helped an African-American politician, he decided to stay out of that. Also, it's, I don't know if it's a rumor or a myth, but he was quoted, you know, white people, he didn't want to offend white people because white people buy sneakers too. Mm-hmm. So it just wasn't part of his DNA, this social justice. But I'm really happy that the younger players, LeBron James, are stepping up and they're no longer just going to shut up and play basketball.
Cecil?
Yeah, Michael Jordan was somewhat a reflection of the 90s. Certainly social justice activism was not a new thing. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who played in the era before Michael Jordan, accused Michael Jordan of taking commerce over conscience. And so that I'm glad to see that a younger generation has certainly agreed to and to advocate for social justice. And, you know, even later, you know, now the rich multi-billionaire Michael Jordan has now forked over some of his dollars to social justice organizers. I'm pleased to see that people in this generation have chosen to follow the cause of social justice.
Professor Johnson.
I think Michael Jordan has always been criticized for not speaking out. One mother of one of the young men that was killed over a fight over his sneakers asked him to speak out, and he refused to do so. So he just never wanted to take a political position. And I think that comment about commerce over conscience is a good one. Also, the times were different. I think we have a greater understanding in this time, and social media and the instantaneous ability to find out things, and for people with phones that are also cameras to be able to expose the truth in a way that didn't happen before. So it's a different time. And to give Michael Jordan credit, he has stepped up now and aligned himself with social justice and put some money behind it as well. So I think he's come around to see the importance of using his platform.
If you are just joining us, you're listening to Let's Talk About Race, an intergenerational journalistic roundtable focusing on the issue of race. From Grassroots News, I'm your host and moderator, Lanita Duke.
I'm Althea Billings. I'm the news director here at KBOO.
I'm Cecil Prescott. I'm a talk show host.
I am Professor Johnson, political commentator from Houston, Texas.
Hello, this is Nia Gray, the host of The Faith Report, where faith and social justice meet.
Hi, I'm Ava Gercher, the kid reporter.
No, they are not playing basketball. No, they are not playing basketball. No, they are not. No, they are not.
This is Nia Gray, and welcome to The Faith Report, where evangelism meets social justice. African American sports figures are no strangers to activism, from Bill Russell in the 1960s to the Fists of Fury at the 1968 Summer Olympics, where the gold and silver winners, Tommy Smith and John Carlos, stepped onto the podium and raised their fists above their bowed heads to silently protest racial discrimination. This month, the Milwaukee Bucks made an unprecedented statement by boycotting Game 5 of the NBA playoffs. It just so happens to be the 4-year anniversary of Colin Kaepernick's first kneeling during a football game to protest police brutality. The boycotts expanded into canceling the NBA playoffs for a week, and other sports organizations joined in solidarity, including the WNBA, Major League Baseball, and Major League Soccer. The Cleveland Cavaliers superstar LeBron James said, "I will not just shut up and dribble. I get to sit up here and talk about what's really important." As athletes come forward to protest and speak out against systemic racism, is that enough to influence change? The Trump White House and the GOP convention failed to acknowledge the complete stall of most American sports. But the sports world and many Americans were watching, and they were ready to act. Black athletes are superstars on the field or the hardwood, but when they're driving in their cars, they're just another black face that's often racially profiled by the police. My hope is that the protests expose to the American public that George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and many others are not just isolated incidents, but a product of systemic racism. Many white Americans, including Donald Trump, only blame bad apples for police brutality. The deaths of so many African Americans at the hand of law enforcement is just a few bad cops, and that's to be expected. You always have a bad apple, no matter where you go, they say. In fact, in a recent survey, it showed 72% of white evangelical Protestants said that they believe that the killings of African American men by police are isolated incidents.
which stands in sharp contrast to the African-American Protestants, who believe these incidents are part of a broader pattern of how the police mistreat minorities. This reveals a shameful truth in the church, that Jesus's message of love your neighbor and all are equal in Christ is taking a back seat, that race, not denomination or theology, is the determining factor when it comes to people's perspectives. Sadly, the survey also showed white Christians are less likely to believe the experiences of Black Americans than non-Christian whites. Racism has and still exists in the church. So-called Christians who claim to love all in the name of Jesus are being put to shame by non-church attending people. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King also understood that political and symbolic power that sports has. He understood that the athletic field could be a powerful megaphone for civil rights and racial justice. And he famously said, "This is a protest and a struggle against racism and injustice. That's what we're working to eliminate. No one looking at these demands can ignore the truth of them. Freedom always demands sacrifice. And the athletes have the courage to say, we're going to be men, and the United States of America have deprived us of our manhood, of our dignity, and our native worth. And consequently, we're going to stand up and make the sacrifices."
No, they are not playing basketball. No, they are not playing basketball. No, they are not. No, they are not.
And for Fred Van Vliet, who is a free agent and is literally saying what he said with maybe $30 million on the table, and yet the character of Fred Van Vliet to say, we need to slow down, we need to pause, and we need to ask ourselves a question. And I said this earlier, Scott, as American citizens, every single one of us should be asking the same question. Are we on the side of right and truth or the wrong side? And are we individually doing enough? So I hope we follow the example of these high character men of the NBA.
We entered with so many issues, so many things going on. COVID, the pandemic, George Floyd, social issues, political issues, so many things were at hand. It's just been an incredible off season in camp, and now we're finally together working. But never before this year has it been so deep and so rich in the exchanges with our players, in how they've taken this opportunity to teach us more and deeper about what the life of a Black man is like in America, Black men and women. And they've been compelled to speak out more than ever. There's been less fear and less concern of, you know, what's going to happen. I love our environment is such that our guys are willing to say what they can say, and they're okay about that, which we need to hear, because this has been a process of truth telling and reality checks that just brings me to a point where, as we're speaking about all that's going on, and this is about racism in America, that white people don't know. They don't know enough. And they need to be coached up, and they need to be educated about what the heck is going on in this world. The Black people can't scream anymore. They can't march anymore. They can't bare their souls anymore to what they've lived with for hundreds of years, because white guys came over from Europe and started a new country with a great idea and a great ideals and wrote down great writings and laws and all of that about democracy and freedom and equality for all. And then it ain't happened. That's not what happened, because we went down this other road here. We followed economics and rich white guys making money, and they put together a system of slavery. And we've never left it, really. It's never gone away. And the really amazing thing that I've learned is Black people know the truth. They know exactly what's going on. It's white people that don't know. And it's not that they're not telling us. They've been telling us the stories. We know what's right and what's wrong. We just have not been open to listen to it. We've been unwilling to accept the real history. We've been taught a false history of what happened in this country. We've been basing things on false premises, and it has not been about equality for all. It has not been about freedom for all. It's not been for opportunity for all, and it needs to be, because this is a humanity issue that we're dealing with. This is a white people's issue to get over it and learn what's going on and to figure it out and start loving everybody that is part of our country and that want to come to our country, wherever they want to come from. Our players are screaming at us. Can you feel me? Can you see me? Can you hear me? They just want to be respected. They just want to be accepted, just like all of our white children and families want to be. It's no different because we're all the same.
That was Doris Burke, longtime sports announcer from ESPN, followed by Peter Carroll, coach of the NFL Seattle Seahawks. You're listening to Let's Talk About Race. This segment, Free Throws for Justice.
An amazing thing about the 2020 uprising was the creation of new community organizations, new ways in which people connected with one another. And it reminds me of that saying, and I'm probably going to mess it up, but this isn't your granddaddy's civil rights movement. And that meant that a lot of the old guard had to say, much like Mr. Biden had to say, we have to pass it on to a new generation. And that means that you're going to ruffle some feathers, and people don't understand, because this is the way we've always done it. This is the way we've always fought for social justice. Well, yes, but this is a different time. We can take the lessons from different eras. The core message in terms of who we are and how to treat people, but different times may mean different ways of proclaiming that message and different ways to implement the change you want to see.
You know, that's funny you brought that up, Cecil. The best example of that is what happened during the 2024 Democratic National Convention, when so-called progressives and people to the left reclaimed the red, white, and blue. They reclaimed to be patriotic by advocating for social change is the most American thing you can do. It was interesting to see how they reclaimed that.
Yes.
That
yes.
Positive view of America has been reclaimed by progressive and so-called leftists and the Democrats.
Yes, indeed. It reminds me, I just finished reading King A Life by Jonathan Eig, or E-I-G. And one of the things that came out of that was how patriotic Martin Luther King and the movement. It wasn't the civil rights movement was based on a belief, a deep belief that the American dream was a possibility for those for whom it was not meant to be. Black people were written out of the Constitution, or if they were written in, only 3/5. The battles, the struggles over the years reminds us that there was always a struggle for justice and a love for this country in spite of everything that this country did to deny the personhood of Black people. They continue to say, we believe in this country. And the uprising of 2020 and to 2024, what you mentioned about the Democratic Convention was a reclaiming of patriotism. Now, it's not that patriotism, my flag, right or wrong type patriotism. It's a patriotism, my flag, because I am here, I want to make sure that we live up to the ideals that we proclaim we want to be. So it's a patriotism, it's not a blind patriotism. It's a patriotism with eyes wide open of who we are, who we have been, where we are now, and where we want to go in the future.
It's the rare occasion when sports and politics collide, and an NFL quarterback has certainly ignited a firestorm. We're talking about Colin Kaepernick. He's the San Francisco 49ers quarterback, and he's been refusing to stand for the national anthem.
I mean, ultimately, it's to bring awareness and make people, you know, realize what's really going on in this country. There are a lot of things that are going on that are unjust. People aren't being held accountable for, and that's something that needs to change. That's something that, you know, this country stands for freedom, liberty, justice for all. And it's not happening for all right now. It's something that I've seen, I felt, wasn't quite sure how to deal with originally. And it is something that's evolved. It's something as I've gained more knowledge about, you know, what's going on in this country in the past, what's going on currently. These aren't new situations. This isn't new ground. Is things that have gone on in this country for years and years and have never been addressed, and they need to be. I'll continue to sit. I'm going to continue to stand with the people that are being oppressed. To me, this is something that has to change. And when there's significant change, and I feel like that flag represents what it's supposed to represent, and this country is representing people the way that it's supposed to, I'll stand. There's a lot of things that need to change. One specifically is police brutality. There's people being murdered unjustly and not being held accountable. Cops are getting paid leave for killing people. That's not right. That's not right by anyone's standards. You know, I have great respect for men and women that have fought for this country. I have family, I have friends that have gone and fought for this country. And they fight for freedom. They fight for the people. They fight for liberty and justice for everyone. And that's not happening. I mean, people are dying in vain because this country isn't holding their end of the bargain up as far as, you know, giving freedom and justice and liberty to everybody. It's something that's not happening. And I've seen videos, I've seen circumstances where men and women that have been in the military have come back and been treated unjustly by the country they fought for and have been murdered by the country they fought for on our land. That's not right. This stand wasn't for me. This stand wasn't because I feel like I'm being put down in any kind of way. This is because I'm seeing things happen to people that don't have a voice, people that don't have a platform to talk and have their voices heard and affect change. So I'm in a position where I can do that, and I'm gonna do that for people that can't. I think a lot of my teammates come from areas where this might be a situation. Their families might be put in this situation. It's something that I've had a lot of people come up to me and say, you know, I really respect you for what you're doing and what you're standing for. So to me, that's something that I know what I'm doing what's right, and I know other people see what I'm doing is right. It's something that we have to come together, we have to unite, we have to unify and make a change.
And the struggle continues.
But Max, what was your reaction to how each team handled this, their social justice actions last night? And also feel free to comment on the reaction from the crowd as well.
Well, I mean, to me, that's really what it's about, the reaction from the crowd, which was very, as people said, disappointing and even maybe disgusting, I think is a better word. I think, first of all, like the most innocent explanation of that reaction, and there's some truth to it, it may be multi-layered, is that people are like, come on, we don't want to see, we just want things to be sports the way we like them and the way we know them and everything back to normal, right? Then maybe that's a reaction to that. Part of it is some bad people, you know, who don't like this idea of social justice because they subscribe to white supremacy. I mean, that's alive in this country. And part of it is just people in low quality information news silos where they've been propagandized against just people even standing up and locking arms and what that means. But you understand that when people say even the most innocent explanation, I just want to get back to normal, what that really means. As I've been saying, in light of this pandemic, people have a real impulse to want to get things back to the way they know them. And leagues, which are predominantly African American.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Wake up, KBOO listeners. It's